Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Welcome back in. Cofield and Company live at the front yard at Ellis Island. We're in a Christmas spirit. They're in a Christmas spirit here, too. The eggnog's available. Are you a big eggnog guy, JVT?
Love eggnog.
And so am I.
I think it's absolutely tremendous. I've never partaken in the alcoholic eggnog before, so I feel like that's something I have to cross off on my bucket list, but absolutely love eggnog.
You can get the bottle, take it home here at Ellis Island, here at the front yard.
I will.
Yeah.
Smells great.
Yeah.
Food smells great.
The food's always awesome as well, but come on down, join us. We got a lot of station swag here today, JVT.
That's right. You walk in, see us right in the back. Say what's up, grab some shirts and everything more. Come on, dude.
And honestly, you might also be able to meet John Murray.
I was going to say, there's celebrities in the house.
Yeah, very, very much so. All right. We haven't talked a lot about what transpired yesterday and Saturday in the NFL. John, I want to start with Sunday night, though. Actually, before we do that, Colts and 49ers, it's down to four. You got to lay the four, right, with the 49ers now? Down to four?
At this low point, especially at one point, it was 6.5, and the only real big change has been DeForest Buckner's playing, and I don't think that's really worth a 2-point
adjustment. Not 2.5
points.
Yeah,
so I think buying back on four makes some sense. That's why I asked Nick about it from Boomer Sportsbook about when does the buyback come, and it doesn't really look like it's happening. Looking at the screen, this is going to be four across the board. I'm kind of surprised. I thought that 5.5-ish was kind of a fair number.
I'm with you. I thought six was fair, honestly. But here you go. You got four with the Niners here at Boomers against the Colts and Old Man Rivers at the Luke tonight in Indianapolis. All right. JVT. I'm Jeff Parles, by the way. He's JVT. We're in for Cofield here on Cofield and Company, ESPN Vegas. I'll just throw this at you real quick.
Dude, he looks so fat.
What, Rivers?
They just showed him walking in. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That shot is not flattering.
Look at that.
Just showed. That is not flattering. That's a little more flattering. But it's not quite Burt Reynolds in The Longest Yard.
No, he was actually svelte. He was in shape.
Well, he at least had the gray beard.
Yes.
Rivers doesn't have any facial hair.
I'm talking about the Adam Sandler version of The Longest.
Yes, of course. Okay. Of course, yes. Not the original.
No. You haven't seen it.
The original or the recent?
The original.
Okay.
To me, the original is the Adam Sandler version.
Fair enough. You know what? For people our age, it kind of is. Just as
correct.
When it came out. So, I want to go to last night, though. Because the Baltimore Ravens, who I'm sure are still number one in some people's power ratings still, JVT, at 7-8.
Yeah.
They did something that has just become just a theme of recent John Harbaugh football.
Yeah.
They had a double-digit lead with under 11 minutes to go. Derrick Henry scored a touchdown to go up 11. And I'm a little mad at myself that I didn't just immediately go bet the Patriots, at least plus the points live.
Sure.
But New England comes back. They win at 28-24. Derrick Henry doesn't play at all in the last 11 minutes. Get Snoop Huntley in there because Lamar, again, injured, back to contusion. We don't know if he's going to play on Saturday. The Ravens need to win out. They'll likely be an underdog in Green Bay, even if it is Malik Willis for Green Bay, especially if it's Huntley. And then they would have to beat Pittsburgh. Oh, and Pittsburgh would have to lose again. Pittsburgh would have to lose twice now. They'd have to lose to Cleveland, too, right?
Yeah, it's a two-game.
They'd have to lose to Cleveland as well, which probably won't happen if Pittsburgh's playing their guys, even without DK Metcalf, who was suspended two games earlier today. I think it's time for the Ravens, and I think you agree with me, I think it's time that John Harbaugh's gone at the end of this year. And if he's not, and this is a hard one for Lamar Jackson because he's coming off this year where he was absolutely battered the whole year and wasn't healthy after the first 3 weeks. If Harbaugh's still around, if I'm Lamar Jackson, I want out. I want out completely. I want out because if we are to believe what the narrative is around Lamar, where Lamar is the most talented player in this league, and what, the Ravens have won three playoff games with him? Three playoff games? They've been the one seed twice. They had, but they were a road favorite in Buffalo last year when they lost. They were a pick'em in 2020. Yeah, I know Jackson got hurt in that game, but still, that was a tight game. They lose as overwhelming favorites in 2019 to Ryan Tannehill and the Titans. It's very possible, even with the change of Harbaugh's definitely taking the Ravens as far as he can at this point. But I think you can start asking the question of, have we seen the best football of Lamar Jackson in Baltimore? And then you could even ask the further question of, have we seen the best football of Lamar Jackson, period, at this point?
Yeah, I don't want to go there. I mean, he was great last year.
He was awesome the first 3 weeks.
Yes, too. And he was very injured, so I don't think that I would go as far as saying that Lamar Jackson might be done. But I more wanted to bring the conversation up. I'm not as strong on you as getting rid of Harbaugh. I think you're having the conversation if you're Baltimore. It's also hard to ignore having double-digit win seasons in 6 out of 7 years heading into this season, and then the season goes awry with injuries to your best player. I think that there's still something there with Harbaugh to potentially win. And I'll always say it, I mean, the grass is not always greener, to use the cliche. It's college, but I'll use it as an example. People wanted James Franklin out of there, and they got him. And now all of a sudden you're looking around and going, all right, like, I guess Matt Campbell might be fine, but James Franklin was getting you 11 wins and into the end of the playoffs. I don't know what Campbell's going to be. And it's the same thing here. You just don't know what that's going to be. Who are you going to go get that would guarantee that they would push you through to the point that you have not reached under Harbaugh?
Well, and that's kind of the discussion Cofield and I had on Saturday, actually. Throw the flag over a TI. You know, this is not a good year to be hiring a coach in the NFL, because I don't think there's many good candidates that are available here. And you can make the argument that one of the best candidates available is Monken, and he's already on your staff, and you've already come up short with him as your play caller.
Sure.
So you're kind of in a weird, this is a weird year to be hiring a head coach in the NFL, where I was making the point where I think, Mark, if I'm the Giants or the Titans, who have had the opening for months now, then my first call is to Marcus Freeman in Notre Dame, because I don't really like any of the other coordinators that are out there. And look, I'm not saying that permanently we're going to look to college more than coordinators. It's just, a lot of those young guys who were hot shot coordinators got hired last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this go around, what, the best coordinator available is Jesse Minter, probably?
Well, I think it depends on what you think about certain guys.
You want to give Kingsbury a second chance?
Cliff Kingsbury would be there, potentially. By the way, I mean, Kingsbury might be, you know, what's the gif of Shannon Sharp when he's like doing the pointing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, I mean, I think Kingsbury's probably doing that a little bit with Arizona. Like, see, look.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyler Murray, you guys gave me that. He's not really that great, and this thing's falling apart, and Arizona wants to move on. I would also say a little bit, because we always think of assistants as young, and Kingsbury's there. But
sure.
Steve Spagnuolo's done a brilliant job in his time as a defensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. Is this a time where everything falls apart, and he decides that, hey, you know what, let me give this another shot. Let's go somewhere else. What about some of the other defensive names? What about Brian Flores? He's repaired his relationships enough in the league after a brilliant stretch here with Minnesota that you would trust him to go be a head coach of a team like that. Or Lou Anarumo, who had a stretch with Cincinnati where you thought he was going to be a head coach.
It was him and Gannon in Arizona, yeah.
All of the fault fell at his feet. He gets fired. He comes to Indianapolis. He's done a good job with this defense. And Cincinnati continues to be a dumpster fire. I think we can safely say it was not his fault. I think there's some candidates out there. Now, they're all unknowns, going back to my original point. But I do think there's some candidates out there you could convince yourself are somewhat attractive just in the league itself. And then you get to the Marcus Freemans of the world.
Well, and then you look, you have Robert Saleh tonight, who a lot of people could say that was just the Jets' fault, which it probably was, that he was not as good as he was. Look at what he's done with this defense in San Francisco. I mean, so I don't know if you saw this list. The Ringer last week put out a top 30 candidates list. Robert Saleh was number one on that list. Number two was Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of, like, and And it kind of goes to your point, too, where it's like, yeah, there's no young guys, but it's like, there's a lot of unknown behind those two. Like, again, I'm even willing to say that Saleh's an unknown in a competent organization as a head coach. McCarthy, we know what Mike McCarthy is at this point, and I'm sure there would be some teams that would be happy to hire him. But if you're the Baltimore Ravens and you get rid of John Harbaugh, and this would have been the same argument for Pittsburgh if they got rid of Tomlin. Now that the Steelers are going to win the North, there's a 0% chance Tomlin is going after this year. Does Mike McCarthy with Lamar Jackson excite you? It doesn't for me.
Right.
Not at all. So it's just, again, it's a weird year, and I just wonder how many jobs are actually going to be open. Like, we know the Giants and the Titans are open.
Raiders probably.
Raiders will likely be open, and it should be because Carroll has been that awful, and any of the names we just listed will be better than what Pete Carroll gave them this year and what Antonio Pierce gave them last year as well. And then
Atlanta.
I don't think they're going to get rid of him. I would, but I don't think they're going to get rid of him. I think Arthur Blank's going to come up with some weird excuse to keep him around.
I think there's a good excuse there, especially trying to get somebody in the building that can develop Penix, who has not looked great.
And then Bowles in Tampa, if they miss the playoffs, I think Todd is gone.
I think he's probably gone,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I think that's the one, and of course that's the wrong year to do it because the two guys that you should have hired to replace him are now coaching Carolina and Jacksonville.
Yep.
So a weird year if you're going to be hired.
Arizona?
Everything I've read on Gannon says he's safe, but if they go 3-14, I think that's going to be one where they blame. You know what? Kyler was the issue here.
Right.
I think that's what's going to end up happening there in Arizona. Again, I don't think it's a good crop to be hiring a coach this go around. Other results in the NFL yesterday. Well, actually, that other point from that Raven game yesterday, JVT, where Drake May and the Patriots come back. They win by 4. Now they likely are going to win the AFC East. They have a shot at the number one seed in the AFC as well if Denver loses to the Chargers the final week of the season, which is very realistic. The MVP market is, again, you brought this up with award markets are kind of clueless. Here at Boomers, here at Ellis Island, Stafford is minus 165, Drake May is plus 135. I think the narrative on Drake May is completely bizarre at this point, because if you just compare the two, the numbers, and just watching the game, Stafford's clearly the MVP. It was his fault, though, that they gave up 38 the other night, right, JVT?
That and the punt return as well is a little bit of an issue. I don't know why Stafford couldn't make a stop there. But, no, I am – it's kind of a really hardcore niche topic because sports betting is still not as popular as we think it is. But this premise that betting markets are the end-all, be-all when it comes to awards and are accurate is incredible to me. I think if you're accurately pricing this, Stafford should be like minus 400 to win this thing and maybe even higher. He's going to have a season in which he is going to throw for over 40 touchdowns and fewer than 10 interceptions. He is playing the Falcons and the Cardinals in his last two games. He is going to absolutely dominate both of those teams. Drake May has been a good quarterback, and Patriots fans should be excited for what they have. He's also been beating up on a very weak schedule. I don't think there's really any question at this point right now, but my whole premise, my whole argument, my whole issue is people not only looking at this and thinking it's gospel, but using it as like a point of their argument. I had so many people tweet at me yesterday telling me, no, see, he's still in it, and then sending me awards odds. Like, brother, those odds have no clue what's going on. They don't know what any of these voters are thinking at this point right now. We had somebody who has a vote, and I don't think he's going to win. We had somebody who has a vote tweet out, I think Devin White is a front runner for most for comeback player of the year.
What?
Yeah, it was Ian Rappaport. Now, it's probably agent jargon, and I saw a bunch of people tweeting him, he's not even listed on the market. Who are you? That's a voter who's telling you that he's a front runner for comeback player of the year.
That's kind of crazy.
I mean, it is, but that's a guy who has a vote. That's a dude who decides, and people are telling him that he's wrong. It's his vote. He can do with it what he wants. There is no variance in these sort of markets. So to swing wildly the way that we are, Jeff, I don't know about you. I don't think there's any voter in the history of ever, because they're all digital now, that goes, oops, and accidentally votes for somebody that they're not going to vote for.
That would be fun.
Right. It's not going to happen. So I'm amazed by people who think that these are like lock and barrel. This is it. This is what the market is, and this is how it's going to go. I mean, good on you, but I don't think that's the case. The fact that because of a punt return, Stafford's odds dropped is ridiculous.
And I 100% agree. He's been the best player in the league this year.
No question.
And you know, it's funny because, and this goes back to the conversation we were having before at the beginning of the show of the Coach of the Year, where you have, if San Francisco wins out, San Francisco's the one seed. You have Mike McDonald, who's done an amazing job in Seattle. They could get the one seed still. You have Mike Vrabel and Sean Payton alive for the one seed in the AFC. And then you have Liam Cohen, who has Jacksonville. Jacksonville's 11 wins.
Yep.
And they pummeled.
You're getting better.
Pummeled Denver in Denver yesterday, which, by the way, as someone who has 25-1 on Jacksonville to win the AFC from earlier in the year, JVT, I am very happy I got in early because this Jacksonville team is very much alive to not only make the Super Bowl, but win the Super Bowl at this point.
Of course.
Because Liam Cohen is Trevor Lawrence playing under control.
Mm-hmm.
And Trevor Lawrence, when he's playing under control, is a legitimate top 10 quarterback at this point.
Looks like it.
So, but it is crazy to me just, again, how compact this whole league is. And honestly, how compact those odds are on Stafford. It's just ridiculous at this point. JVT, I do have a question for you, though. Because we have 2 weeks, the 2 weeks and one game to go now. The possible one seeds here in both conferences. Because this can get a little bit crazy here. In the AFC, still alive for the one seed. Again, some of this would take a ton. But Denver, New England. Buffalo is technically alive still, but they're not going to get there. Jacksonville and the Chargers, all still alive for the one seed. NFC is the Rams are technically still alive for the one seed. The Seahawks, the 49ers, and the Chicago Bears are all still alive for the one seed. Which of those teams I just mentioned would be the team that would be the least intimidating one seed? You can go either conference. Period.
Probably the Chargers, given the home field or lack thereof, the bad offensive line. They lost another offensive lineman yesterday in the game against Dallas. Chargers are probably up there, and I think the answer a lot of people would be screaming right now at their radios or phones would be the Chicago Bears in the NFC. But you can say all you want about how lucky they've been, and they have been lucky.
Sure.
That's one of the best running games in the National Football League. That is a team with the ability to line up with a creative rushing attack and run it down your throat, no matter who the opponent is. And that's a little bit more dangerous, I think, playing in that disgusting environment at Soldier Field with the wind and the sleet and the slog or whatever the hell it's called. And having to go out there and deal with that rushing attack in those conditions, I think would actually be a little bit more dangerous than people think.
I think Chicago is live to make the Super Bowl, and there's one path for it to happen. That path would be The Rams and the Seahawks end up with the 6 and the 5.
Yep.
And they lose to Philadelphia and the NFC South champion. And then if that's the case, everyone who's left in the field is capable of making the Super Bowl in that scenario. So that would be how I would look at it. If I'm looking at it from as a whole, I'm going to go off the board here.
Okay.
From what I think people would expect. By the way, Philip Rivers is not close on the deep ball on the first throw of the game.
I mean, what's funny is you heard me laugh. It's like they heard all week that he's got a dead arm, and they were like,
We're going deep on the first play.
We're going to prove it. And then he just tried to chuck one downfield to Pittman, which it wasn't really close, and it was dead.
It was good coverage, too, by Mustafa.
But it was underthrown, and he wasn't going to get there.
So I'm going with the Denver Broncos as the most possible vulnerable number one seed. And I know that may be a surprise to some, but talk about being lucky. Up until yesterday, they were luckier than Chicago was.
You mean winning every one score
game? Every single one score game. And look, I think Bo Nix has improved a lot this year from being, and he's improved a ton since the beginning of last year, where he was virtually unplayable for the first 5 weeks of the season last year in his rookie year, turned into a reasonable starter, and then has been much better this year. But that defense that is supposedly a top-flight defense got carved yesterday by Jacksonville. Got carved. And I don't think they match up well with the Chargers, even with all the Chargers' offensive line issues. I think Denver's going to struggle to score against that team. If they play New England, I'll give New England a chance. Buffalo, I would expect to go in there and beat the Broncos a mile high. So I'm in the camp that the Broncos would be the most vulnerable of those teams, even though the Chargers, I think, are a good choice as well because they have no home field and they have no offensive line. So be interesting to see how it all plays out over these last two, Well, JVT, we're down to 33 games, including this one, for the regular season in the NFL. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we are going to be heading to college. CFP, more reaction, more thoughts on the games in the quarterfinals and more when we get back. Cofield and Company live at Ellis Island, the front yard here on ESPN Las Vegas.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company here at the front yard at Ellis Island. Come on down. All you can eat menu available. Good burgers. Anything with pork. Delicious. Delicious. Here down there at Ellis Island. Jeff Parles, Jonathan Von Tobel here.
I like the nachos. The barbecue is great, too.
Everything's delicious down here. Nachos, the nachos right are gigantic, too. They feed everyone in Philip Rivers' family, actually.
Correct.
So,
all 12 members.
Speaking of Philip Rivers, by the way, Colts are in field goal range, JVT.
They are.
3rd and 7 at the 9 or 31. This is actually, an impressive drive from the Colts.
No, it is. I mean, look, I'm a big Shane Steichen guy. I think as a play caller, he is actually very, very good. And I think he's already maybe one of the better play callers in the National Football League already. The problem is, first off, his game management stuff can be a nightmare at times. Like, he has to perfect that part of the craft if he's going to get all of them. But he has schemed up a lot of wide-open dudes on this drive. Jonathan Taylor was wide open, dragging across the field, got a linebacker out in space, burned him for a big chunk play. Same thing with Josh Downs out in the middle of the field as well on the left sideline, wide open, burned him with that. And then here again, they actually had another big completion on 3rd and 7, but offensive line got called for a penalty, so it's not going to count. Steichen's been great. He's been scheming this thing up, and Rivers, this is part of what everybody's told you. He at least can run the offense. A lot of it's been within the line of scrimmage, but still, he's done it.
Hey, look, it's a little better than last week. A little bit, at least so far, but long
game. Off script first, yeah.
Long game. Long game. We'll see how it plays out here for Rivers. Is actually a pretty good throw again. Look at that. Look at old Phil spinning at JVT.
Yes, Downs again. And Josh Downs is a guy who last year had a really strong year. This year had oddly kind of fallen out of favor, whether it was because Daniel Jones just didn't have a connection with it, whatever it is. But he has had a resurgence under Philip Rivers, and that was a good move.
Good route.
Yep.
Good route. All right, so shifting gears to college. We touched on this a little bit earlier in the show, but we didn't really talk about it long at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. So, Alabama beats Oklahoma on Friday night. You thought both teams were terrible.
I mean, I think running for 22 yards in a playoff game probably isn't a
great
thing. Yeah.
Probably not a good sign for the Rose Bowl against Indiana.
I would say
Alabama.
So.
Probably not a good sign. Oklahoma really just to put a bow on their season. Oklahoma was extraordinarily lucky that their schedule kind of dissipated into relative nothingness, and they were lucky Alabama just turned the ball over 40 times in that first game. Look at that. Look at that.
Touchdown.
Is that going to hold up, or is that a penalty?
No, that's offside.
It was offside.
Defense.
Look at that.
That's touchdown.
Take that, potential one seed.
How that? I mean, I need it. I would love it. Alec Pierce, 20-yard reception. I have a Jacksonville first, Colts second exacta in the AFC South from before the season started. So let's, if we can climb back into second, boys, let's get this thing done. Also, we didn't note this. I know you're talking about the playoffs, but a quick aside, I don't like these uniforms for the Indianapolis.
They are not good.
Yeah.
They are not good. And it did not, Phil looks bigger than he did last week in the white jersey, which is usually the opposite. Usually you don't look as slim in white clothing, but hey, there you go. But look at that, 7-0 Indy. See, the bettors knew what they were doing right away, JVT.
Good
right?
job. I mean, as I always like to say, and many do who watch football know this already, those scripted drives have a higher rate of success than you think. You know, I like to make the comparison. A lot of people like to bet the no run in the first inning, but that's actually the top of your lineup. That's probably you get a little bit more scoring than you usually think. Same thing here. So let's see what happens when you get off script. But good play, good drive from Phil, and even better drive, I think, from Shane Steichen. I thought that was a really well-called drive.
So going back to the CFP, so Alabama beats Oklahoma. Oklahoma was a fraud. I'm still not convinced that I don't care that Alabama won the game. committee still got it wrong with them over Notre Dame, but whatever. If I'm still going to feel that way even if Alabama wins the championship.
Yep.
The committee got it wrong with them over Notre Dame. And then Saturday, we'll pivot back to A&M and Miami in a second, because Miami's the only team that won on Saturday, and this may surprise people. Miami's the only team on Saturday that I think can actually win the national championship still. But we'll get back to that in a second, because the conversation abound has been just the G5 just getting destroyed by everyone nationally. They don't deserve to be there. Why were they there at all? It should have just been the top 12, all that fun jazz. And John, I'm curious your thoughts here, because I have mixed feelings on everything. I have mixed feelings on everything, but I'm curious your thoughts, because I think you're a little more passionate in defending the G5 here than I am.
I mean, I think that it's a stupid argument if you're talking about not including them, because what's dumb about the argument is, like, I saw a lot, you know, Eric McClain does a good job for, like, ACC Network, former Clemson offensive lineman, you know, pick your college football analyst, but his was one that sticks out of my mind because it was one of those, this is terrible for our game tweets. Was it terrible for your game when I watched Tennessee go out to Ohio State last year in the first round, get their faces caved in?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. Was it terrible when I watched Georgia? Who did they beat in the national championship game?
They beat TCU 65-7 in the title game.
Okay, Power 5 program. Yeah.
And just to piggyback on that, was it good when Kevin Jennings turned the ball over 14 times in Happy Valley last year for SMU?
Of course. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So this thought that these blowouts are just terrible for the sport of college football and thus we should blame the little guys for doing it, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think you're willfully ignoring everything that has been in front of you in these college football playoff games. These have been blowouts. Four-team semifinals, they were blowouts. First round last year, they were blowouts. You can't use that as your point of reference and your reason why. I would respect you more if you just said, I only want big brands, I don't care about these teams. Way better.
Yeah.
I would respect you way more. But for you to try to do this, our game is in such a bad spot, shut up. It's so disingenuous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And at some point, because I'll throw the sports betting community in here as well. Guys, I'm tired of hearing about how Notre Dame could have won these games. I'm tired of it. Because guess what they didn't do? They didn't win the games, right? We watched a matchup of two teams that beat Notre Dame. I'm tired of hearing about point spreads and power ratings and this is what it should be. Then don't play the season. Then project every best team and then line them up. And let's not play a regular season. Let's just start the playoffs in August, and let's just go from there. What are we doing?
Do all 140 and put them in just a year-long bracket, right? There you go. That's exactly what
we're doing. No, because we don't need those lower tier teams.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That's right. Yeah, you're right. You don't need them at all. That's right. But, you know, I'll just say this. In regards to both of those games, with Ole Miss thumping Tulane and then James Madison getting in the back door against Oregon, this should be a 24-team playoff. And I know a lot of people would be like,
24?
Yes. They should just skip the 14, skip the 16, go right to 24 like the FCS does it. And you then, in that scenario, get more home playoff games, which, by the way, that was the one thing that was unanimous this weekend, that we were all reminded how awesome college football on campus is, JVT.
Of course.
How awesome those environments were across the board for every single game that was mixed in there. But just go to 24, because if you end up in a scenario where, like, look at the actual rankings. James Madison was 24th. Tulane was in the top 20. So you're going to make sure that the G5 is in this field while getting more power conference teams in there for the people that just want to see power conferences. I'm okay with that. And that at least has your path for the smaller schools. Get rid of automatic bids completely. Get rid of them completely. Did you have automatic bids with the 4-team playoff? No.
Right.
This isn't college basketball where the field's 68 and going to be 72. You don't need auto bids. Just get rid of the auto bids. Push it to 24. We all love more football. By the way, You go to 24, guess what? You have an argument to get rid of the conference championship games if you get rid of auto bids also, And you can actually have the season end 1 week after January 1st in that. Like, it can be exactly like the FCS playoff. It's a very simple fix. But again, this is a sport that a lot of people think is broken. I think that college football has never been healthier from the perspective that you have more teams that are capable of winning the title than there's ever been. I mean, we're down to eight. I think of the eight teams that are left, I think six of them, and again, I know I just said that Miami's the only one of these teams that I think can win the title, but if Oregon shows up and beats Texas Tech and gets a rematch against Indiana, second go around against the Hoosiers, things could be different. Miami, I think, is more than capable of beating Ohio State because their defense is amazing.
Yep.
So you have a scenario where I genuinely think 75% of the field is live to win this thing still.
But right now, right. But if you expand it out, that's not going to be the case.
You know what, though?
Like, what team that was left out could have won a title?
I think Notre Dame could have won a title.
Yep.
I think Texas actually could have won a title. I know that
I disagree with that one.
I know people will say, but here's the thing,
You're
though.
You're crazy.
I'm okay with more football. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with having more teams. And I'm also okay with it because then you have more coach. You don't. If you have more playoff teams, you are more likely than not going to have a situation ever happen again with, like, what happened with Kiffin this year. Which, all in all, is terrible for the sport, what happened with Kiffin. Leaving a playoff team for a different job? That's nonsense. Oh, this is going to be a great defensive game here. Touchdown. Was that DeMarcus Robinson?
I can't see who
it
was.
Yeah, that's DeMarcus Robinson.
This was one, too, this game, for anybody who gives a crap about the inner workings of the Indianapolis Colts. You talk about their offensive line beat up. Their secondary's been beat to hell, too.
Yeah, no Gardner tonight.
Charvarius Ward has obviously been out, too. He's on IL, This has been a secondary that's back to the terrible form that they were at the beginning of the year. So this is going to be a very fun game, I think.
Heading that way.
Yeah.
Just to put a bow on this, I know, like, you have more teams technically that can't win the title if you go to 24, but I'm just in the camp that I want everyone to stop whining.
Well, that's never going to happen.
I know that's never going to happen, but if you have 24 teams in a college football playoff, there will be less whining than if you go to 14 or 16.
The thing that I would disagree with is I don't get why we need, like, Vanderbilt in. Like, okay, so what? So Vandy can lose a game?
I don't know about Pavia, but who knows? Pavia could have beat Bama with a second crack at him.
They got their rear ends destroyed by Texas, so I don't know.
I just said Texas is one of the teams left out that could have won the title.
I think 16 is probably where we're going to end up, and that's going to be fine.
Would be shocked if it's not 16 next year.
I mean, I always thought just the mindset of, what was it, 8, I thought was the perfect number. You get the conference champions all get in, and then you get, like, a couple of at-larges and then go from there. But nobody's going to stop complaining about this nonsense. At some point, though, the games have to matter. That's my whole
100%.
Point. The games have to matter. You have to. You can't in one breath say, oh, my college football, it's lost its way, while also then saying, well, I don't like this team that won that conference championship because I don't like that conference. I think they stink, so they can't make it in. It's all ridiculous. It's actually, I think, some of the worst discourse around college football has occurred this year. It's ridiculous.
All I will say one more thing on this. All of the issues with this format has come because the ACC has been incompetent the last 2 years.
Sure.
A lot of the problems have come because of them, because you got two teams in the tournament last year that were likely undeserving. I know Clemson won the conference championship, but SMU was not better than either any of those SEC teams that were left out last year. And then this year, I really do think a big reason, I know everyone points head to head. I think a big reason Miami got in instead of Notre Dame was because they didn't want to leave the ACC out. And they couldn't, and they didn't want to put an 8-5 Duke team in. So a lot of the issues, which, by the way, could have been avoided if you just put Miami in the ACC title game instead of these ridiculous other tiebreakers that they put together that ended up with a 7-5 team in Charlotte with a chance to win the league. So I think a lot of the issues that have come have that one of your quote-unquote power fours has been of the competency of a bad G5 league the last few years.
Right.
I think that's where most of your issues have come, and you – again, if you're the, and this is why, again, I don't ever think that you're going to get the SEC or the Big Ten splintering off. I just don't buy that. But the ACC's given them a good argument for it, where one of your compatriots has been completely incompetent the last 2 years. So that's where my head's at. more than anything else with this whole discourse. 7-7, by the way, in Indianapolis. A nice little crowd here at the front yard at Ellis Island again. And we're going to have our party. A lot of JVT, a lot of good swag to be given away here. So come on down, join us.
Come say what's up.
From 6 to 8, I'll be here. JVT will be here. John Murray's here also. Niners just recovered a fumble on the kickoff, it looks like. So there you go. Not a lot of Niner fans in here, loud and proud. So, and also, too, of course, you got the all-you-can-eat package. You got the all-you-can-drink, spirits and beer. You got the all-you-can-eat with the rigatoni, which, by the way, is the most underrated item on the menu here, JVT.
Okay. I haven't had it.
Really good. The pork belly bites, the fried pickles, the pulled pork, which, you know, the barbecue's great, the pizzas. I know our guy Mateo's a big fan of the spicy pep pizza as well, so come on down, say hello. We're here 6 to 8, and, of course, every Monday night, the all-you-can-eat menu for $45 for all that food that we just mentioned and more on that menu. All right, when we come back, grab bag. Mike Tomlin did it again. He did it again, JVT. And a big move in the NFL as well, state-to-state move. When we get back, Cofield & Company here on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield & Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Get your hand in there, dude.
Niners 14, Colts 7, early goings. We're out here at the front yard in Ellis Island. I'm Jeff Parles, JVT alongside. Cofield back tomorrow, live from Texas. Frisco Bowl, UNLV, and Ohio tomorrow right here on ESPN Las Vegas. 6 o'clock kick, 5 o'clock pregame. Ted Wien pregame show for the Rebels and the Bobcats. Also, multiple games being played at the mini Jerry Dome in the last week because the Missouri State-Arkansas State Bowl game was there, too.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that until yesterday. And the game had already been played for 2 days.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, so we go into the bag here at JVT. I just want to start with just putting a bow on one more thing college football-wise, where I know I'm going to be on a few more times before we get to these games. The wrong team is favored in the Orange Bowl. I think Texas Tech should be favored. Miami, I mean, there were some double digits on Miami when the line came out.
Yeah, 10.5. Yeah.
And now 9.5 is what it settled at. I still think that's way too many points. As long as Beck doesn't throw a pick six that throws the game on its head, which he's more than capable of doing, fully expect Miami to stay in that game. 7 on Indiana and Alabama feel right. Mm-hmm. I think that has the makings of either being Indiana by 3 touchdowns or Alabama has the ball late with a chance to win. Wouldn't be shocked either way. And then I would be floored if Georgia doesn't run Ole Miss out of the building. I think Georgia was the only team in the end that was worth a darn from the SEC.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at on those 4 playoff games.
They seem to be getting better, the Bulldogs, yeah, too, which is something you like. I mean, absolutely housing Alabama in the SEC championship game. I don't know what you want to take from the Georgia Tech game. You lost your starting center.
Take nothing.
It's a game that didn't mean anything, so kind of an odd spot there. But either way, I would generally agree with Georgia, I think. Potentially being the fly in the ointment there and maybe coming out of this as, oh, like that's actually the best team in the country and they won the national championship.
Wouldn't shock me. That Ohio State-Georgia game, if we get it, does have the makings of a potential title game in the semifinals.
Sure.
Honestly, again, if we get chalk, and I'm talking, well, you know what? You can go either way, betting or seed chalk. You can go either way.
Yeah.
You got yourself an amazing Final Four. Either if it's Oregon or Texas Tech that comes out of the Orange Bowl, it doesn't matter which one. Let's go into the bag, though, for the first topic here.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Mike McDaniel possibly coming back to Miami?
I don't buy this at all.
What?
I don't buy this at all.
I look, as soon as you bench Tua, it seemed like a move of desperation for McDaniel of trying to save his job. Like, hey, I got Quinn Ewers to look like an NFL quarterback the last 3 weeks. Or I got Zach Wilson to look like an NFL quarterback in one of the last 3 weeks. That's enough for me to stay around. JVT, I think they're both gone. I think Tua's gone. I think McDaniel's gone. I think this is a total restart in Miami.
Well, so are you getting this from Rappaport from over the weekend?
I saw this in multiple spots over the weekend.
Schefter today was on McAfee, and he said it's not decided. Like they're still contemplating. If they go get housed the next 2 weeks and just get absolutely steamrolled, there's no way he's coming back. It seems like that may be one of those situations where the locker room might even be lost. So I don't think that there's any confirmation whatsoever that Miami's bringing him back. In fact, I would say that they're both not there. I think we know Tua's gone, but I think the case is whether or not McDaniels is going to be there, and I would say no.
Talk about a team that has nothing going for them moving forward.
Sure.
Cap hell with Tua's contract, even though it's essentially the same as the Russell Wilson contract based off how the cap has expanded over the last few years. Again, the only desirable factor about that is that you get to live in Miami with that team moving forward. That roster's not close. Not a great offseason to be hiring a coach, but for Miami, not a very desirable job, all things considered.
No, but it's amazing how this works, because you know who's probably going to get the first call immediately in this coaching cycle?
Go ahead.
Mike McDaniel's going to get a call to be an offensive coordinator in 2 seconds.
Oh, 100%. No. Yeah. And I thought you were going to say Mike McCarthy's going to be first in line for the Dolphins.
Like, he's going to be the hottest name out there to go and get, like, some of the pairings that I've heard. If Sirianni's going to stick around and be serious about this, you go and get him and make him your offensive coordinator for Philly.
That'd be an incredible
pairing.
If I was Philly, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, because Petula's not the guy, to say the very least.
And then let him run the offense, too. That's the other part about it.
Well, Sirianni letting Petula run the offense to his own detriment right now. So I don't think that would be an issue. Back into the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Mike Tomlin did it again, JVT. He did it again. Did you know Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season? Bit continues another year.
Yep.
And I'll be honest with you, JVT. I genuinely thought this was going to be the year it was going to end. I thought the defense, they didn't do enough to improve it. I thought Aaron Rodgers was done. And not only is it going, does the streak continue? They're going to win the AFC North.
Sure.
They're going to lose the playoff game in the most wide open playoffs that I can ever remember in the NFL. I'm not saying Pittsburgh's good enough to win 3 playoff games. I don't think they are. But in the 19th consecutive season, Mike Tomlin has been 500 or better. This is actually one of his better coaching jobs.
Yeah.
Amazingly, and he has no chance of winning coach of the year either. That's the funny part of it, as we said earlier.
Yeah, he's one of the many coaches that have done a good job that probably won't even finish as a finalist. I don't really know if I buy them as a legitimate threat, but like you said, get a home playoff game, and then who knows what happens in any single one-off game. And against any of these flawed AFC teams, anybody's going to be able to get it done. But, you know, look, it's credit to Tomlin. Like, he continues to be able to do this here when you're talking about getting teams to just play at their max, achieve it. Maybe the ball rolls your way a couple of times, but, yeah, he's been brilliant.
That Steeler, I am amazed. That roster's not good. No. That's the other part. Like, that roster's not good. And, again, it's kind of interesting from, like, the perspective of, like, Tomlin and Harbaugh essentially have had the same career, right? Like, they've been around basically the same amount of time, AFC North, rivals forever. Harbaugh's kind of devolved into what a lot of people thought Tomlin has been over these last few years, right?
I think it's a little unfair.
Like,
he's had double-digit win seasons in 6 out of 7
years. I know,
years.
But
it just... that's, I think it's a little different.
My point is, like, people have just gone after Tomlin for this last half decade for not winning enough, and Harbaugh hasn't won enough, like, playoff perspective-wise, right? Like,
sure, but I think the difference is that the reason why the whole Tomlin 500 thing is such a funny joke is he's constantly just finishing a game
above
500.
Yeah, it's 9-7, 9-8, yeah, sure.
He's just barely getting by.
You're going to win 10 this year.
Yeah, where Harbaugh, the expectation is a product of his own success because he is regularly ripping off as a head coach 10, 11, 12, 13 win seasons, and then just not performing in the postseason, where Tomlin's limping in as a wild card every time because he barely wins 9.
Last note of the day here, JVT. Chiefs are moving from Missouri to Kansas. Do you care at all?
I mean, not really. It seems like some people care, but I don't know. I don't live there, so. I thought they were already there. And aren't they the Kansas City Chiefs?
Oh, you have Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri, right?
That's ridiculous, by the way. We need to change that.
What, go Missouri, Missouri, Missouri City then?
Trump's going to do something. Like, come on now. We got to do that.
Oh, man. By the way, a lot of people, again, big connections to the state of Missouri for me. A lot of people very angry today. Very angry.
Really?
Even though there was no doubt in my mind they were moving across as soon as they poo-pooed the Jackson County proposal a few months ago. John, it was fun.
I can update your spreadsheet.
Yeah, 2025.
Yeah.
Almost 2026. Cofield back tomorrow, 3 o'clock, leading you into the Ted Wien pregame show for UNLV football. For JVT, I'm Jeff Parles. Thank you, Mateo, as well. Thanks to James in studio. Come hang out with us at Ellis Island, the front yard. We're here until 8.